Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. Last week on the show, we talked about the late theologian and educator Herbert W. Armstrong's world-changing childhood. We talked about how events from the earliest years of his life actually set him up for success in being the physical head of God's work, really for the second half of his entire life. It's amazing how God can work with a person from such a young age to do such incredible things as an adult. Today we're going to continue in the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, this time with chapter 2, which is titled Learning Important Lessons. And I just want to mention here at the beginning, we're getting into the autobiography again this week, but next week we'll have an interview with Mr. Dennis Sleep. He works in the editorial department, and he just finished, I believe it's volume 13 of the Bible Story. 13 volumes already, just making the Bible come to life, all of the colorful stories in the Bible, stories that are stranger and more exciting than any fiction, and they are written up in a way that even a young child could understand. So he finished up volume 13, and we'll be talking about that for at least most of the interview next week on the show. So that's something you can look forward to. Like I said, since we're going through the autobiography today, I also just want to mention that you can get this for free at thetrumpet.com. You can order a free copy. It's a very thick book packed with information. It's also funny because at the end of this second chapter, Mr. Armstrong starts talking about how the story will pick up in interest from here. So after the second chapter, it gets more interesting. Yet when we cover this second chapter, you might wonder why he didn't think it was already interesting from the start. There's some great stories in here. Mr. Armstrong introduces us to his Uncle Frank here at the beginning of chapter 2. Mr. Armstrong often turned to his uncle throughout his life for valuable advice, especially for his career. And these were principles that Mr. Armstrong always applied. And it's something that probably is very much the reason for why he became such a success. His uncle told him, young Herbert, when he was really just a young man still without much experience, when he was only 18, nearly everybody has the delusion that an education is something you get at school and higher education at the university. Uncle Frank continues, people seem to have the idea that an education is something they have all wrapped up at the university, ready to hand it over to you when you buy it by paying the tuition. So that is the common misconception. That has led to a lot of problems in society. A big issue, at least here in America, is people who have paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for an education at a university, and yet they have to spend the rest of their lives paying this off. That's why presidential candidates who promise to relieve them of all their student loan debt do rise to such prominence and popularity, even if such an idea really couldn't be practically applied. These are mistakes that people end up regretting for the rest of their lives, paying that much money. And really, what was it worth, especially at universities now where it seems like half of the purpose of going there is just to party, have all kinds of immoral experiences? Definitely not worth the $100,000 or more price tag in a lot of cases. And it's not something where you can just passively let education just enter your head and then all of a sudden you know how to live your life. A lot of college students probably think that's how it works. If they just sort of half-heartedly pay attention in class, if they just maybe put their head on the book when they go to sleep, so to speak, that they will somehow have an education by osmosis. That's not really how it works. Mr. Armstrong knew this from when he was just 18 with the help of his Uncle Frank. Uncle Frank continues in this quote, "Education comes from study, from books, from lectures, from contacts, from travel, from thinking about what you see and hear and read, and from experience." You think about God's work and God's way of life and how really God's education lives up to every detail of that. Studying, reading good books. I mean, we have Herbert W. Armstrong College now. Much of that education is framed on what Mr. Armstrong taught himself. When he was just 18, he never had formal schooling at the college level. And yet, what did he do? He studied himself night and day in the library at one point for 6 months. And even before that, spending his evenings after coming home from work just reading books about how to get better at his job and other important topics. Here at Armstrong College, study is a massive part of the curriculum. It's a challenging curriculum. You take almost 20 hours a week of classes, but you also have 20 hours a week of work. It's a packed schedule. It's not one of these schedules where at a lot of educational institutions, you go to your classes for 10 hours or so, and then you just have dozens and dozens of hours of free time. What do you think college students usually do with all that extra time when they're not in class, when they're not studying, when they don't even have to have a job in a lot of cases? So much free time inevitably leads to quite a bit of trouble. But at the college, there's a lot of studying going on, memorizing a lot of scriptures, writing papers about various subjects, a lot of course reading. And it's reading about the things that actually matter. Lectures. Students go to lectures probably about 4 hours a day on average. Contacts. This is another thing that is really important for education, having valuable contacts. Quite a few of my friends in the church are entrepreneurs, or they have jobs that require sharp social skills. And they're always telling me stories about the great experiences that they've had traveling, networking with people, all of the open doors that they have been blessed with in their lives because of people they met, because of reaching out to influential people, becoming friends with those people, working hard to provide a benefit for those types of people. And that can really be a crucial part of education. Travel. Every year, members of the Philadelphia Church of God get to travel to various feast sites to observe God's Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day. Just this year for the feast, I think I mentioned it last week on the show, I got to drive up to Wisconsin and then back, and that trip took us through 10 different U.S. states. And throughout that entire drive, I was just in awe of the vast open spaces, all of the luscious farmland, the beautiful surroundings. They're really, you can't find blessings like that anywhere else in the world. America really has been uniquely blessed, and traveling even through the flat middle of this country reminds you of that. I've also had the chance to travel to other places for the feast and for work and for just enjoyment as well. And you do realize just how blessed you are after seeing what some other people have to live with. Through travel, like Mr. Armstrong says later in this chapter too, again titled Learning Important Lessons, you meet all kinds of different people. In this chapter, Mr. Armstrong describes going on some dates with a Southern girl, and every time she would get upset, she would spit out "Yankee," as if that was some kind of an insult. Mr. Armstrong also talks about an experience with a German and how that guy was playing with his gun and was joking around, and he pointed it at Mr. Armstrong, and Mr. Armstrong said, "Whoa, don't point your gun at me." And sure enough, the German, to prove him wrong, decided to point his gun at a wall and pull the trigger, and it blew out the wall. So quite an experience there with someone with a very different background from Mr. Armstrong. And Mr. Armstrong also talks about the first time he ever went into the Deep South. And he hadn't had a lot of experience with black people. He didn't know very many of them. And here at the end of chapter 2, he says, "The terrible years after the war," this is talking about the Civil War, "had done little toward giving our black people the economic, educational, and social advantages the nation owed them. But even though we do not yet have the civil rights problem fully solved, the black people certainly have come a long way. These problems require time, patience, understanding, and replacing prejudice with a love of fellow man." I just wanted to draw attention to that because frequently God's truth, because of various doctrines, because of different passages in the Bible, can be branded by critics as racist. Does that quote sound racist to you? Does it sound like Mr. Armstrong had anything against any type of people he ever interacted with? How could a brazen racist meet with hundreds of world leaders from different nations around the world? Black, white, red, yellow, brown, it didn't matter. It didn't matter what kind of religion they had, what their customs were, what kinds of animals they ate that we typically wouldn't eat over here. It didn't matter. Mr. Armstrong would meet with them gladly, and he would preach to them. He would inspire them with a vision of the future, and he would only talk to them on their terms. He wouldn't try to force them to believe the truth. But Mr. Armstrong knew that traveling, meeting these different types of people, was a vital part of education. Thinking about what you see and hear and read, as Uncle Frank says in this quote, that's also important for being educated. Not just having all of these experiences and reading things, devouring all kinds of material in your educational process, but you actually have to digest it too by thinking about it, by pondering the lessons of what you have experienced. And then, of course, the last part, experience. A lot of the times we have to learn lessons the hard way. Mr. Armstrong had to learn the laws of radiant health the hard way, as the end of the chapter 2 shows. He took a job that probably didn't fit his aptitudes, a job previously filled by 3 different people, and he had to work late into the night and rise really early to start work again the next morning every day for months. And he actually came down with a pretty deadly disease and was unconscious for several days because of that experience. So he had to learn the hard way, the value of sleep, the value of not trying to force yourself into a career field that doesn't fit your aptitudes. And also he learned discipline because this was a diversion from his planned career path. His Uncle Frank had given him a specific amount of time to stay writing ads for a newspaper where he worked. And though he had previously turned down a $2 a week raise, which was back then a massive raise from another newspaper, though he had stayed the course despite the temptation of a pay increase, he didn't stay the course when the allure of travel was presented to him. So even though it was a completely different field involving, kind of judging the time clock at this lumber mill and paying out how much these people had earned, it was a totally different job outside of his comfort zone, outside of his skill set. But he took it anyway because he got to go down to Mississippi. He was from Iowa. He got to travel for this job. He got a job that seemed like it was exotic. So he was swayed off of his previous plan of staying with that newspaper for an entire year. So he had to learn the hard way, quite a few different lessons. And thankfully for us, he wrote these lessons down. Lessons about health, lessons about choosing a right career, lessons about sticking to a plan once you have set it, finishing what you set out to accomplish. Uncle Frank continues here, educating his young nephew Herbert. "The reason we have to maintain schools and universities is simply that most people are too lazy. Most lack the ambition and persistence, the drive to procure an education outside of schools and colleges. Most people must have someone do their thinking and planning for them, assign lessons and homework, and force students to study and learn by a system of rewards and punishments in the form of grades. And finally, a sheepskin with a degree. Pretty condemning quote, because probably the vast majority of us really have to push ourselves to be educated outside of the classroom. It's not something where maybe we work for 8 or 9 hours in a day and then go home and still want to keep educating ourselves, crack open a book or whatever it might be. And yet that is the type of hunger and drive for education that God is looking for. We can't just graduate high school or college and then never learn anything else. That would make us quite useless as citizens, as family members, as friends. We have to keep on growing and keep on educating ourselves. The human mind is just a miraculous creation of God, and we don't want to waste it on frivolous activities, on fleeting pleasures when we need to be getting educated. Education is a lifelong experience. Uncle Frank continues here. This is just such a packed quote. I'm even skipping over some parts of it. It's so much, it's so long, but it's all really important for us to understand. He says here, you can gain a much more thorough and practical knowledge of the profession you have chosen outside than in. So outside the classroom. And so far as general education is concerned, you can acquire that if you have the gumption and the will. So you can see here how this one quote really does apply specifically to Armstrong College. It's a liberal arts education. You receive a well-rounded education. There are physical education classes, health and nutrition type classes. You learn about history. You learn about science. You learn about business and math and English. It's well-rounded. They're not all Bible courses. And it's just giving you a foundation, at least a surface level understanding of all the other topics beyond theology. So Mr. Armstrong basically took his lifetime of self-education and distilled it into a college program. How blessed are the college students here in Edmond and over in Edstone, England, to be able to take this education, to be able to actually go to an institution that offers them this education that Mr. Armstrong had to work a lifetime for. There's also a valuable bit of wisdom here from Mr. Armstrong in chapter 2. He says here, ambition is not only the desire, but the determination and the will to achieve the desired goal. For 2 years, ambition had burned fiercely within me. I wanted both success and to become a well-educated person. I knew I wanted these goals intensively enough to drive myself to any needed extent to succeed. So this is really a helpful quote. A lot of the time we can confuse desire for being the same thing as ambition. But from what I understand, desire and ambition are as different as speed and velocity. Speed is speed, you know, miles per hour or whatever the measurement might be. But velocity is speed in a specific direction. So you have to take the desire and aim it in a specific direction to make it ambition. There has to be a determination and a will to act on that desire. Just wanting something, and no matter how badly we might want it, isn't enough. There has to be real action. Otherwise, we'll just live our whole lives wanting that same thing but never having it. Mr. Armstrong relays his experience here of hiring himself a job. This was his mindset. He wouldn't just ask a company if they needed help. He would go straight to the manager, right to the top, and he would tell that person, look, I have decided to get into this field of work, and I have decided to join your staff because I can learn and I can advance here. This is the type of self-confidence he had. And later on in his life, once God humbled him and worked with him more, his self-confidence turned into God confidence. He started to realize self-confidence can only get you so far. It can do a lot for you physically, but after a while, it just falls short, especially when we're talking about striving for a glorious, spiritual, eternal future. Self-confidence, being self-driven, isn't quite enough. We have to be God-driven. Mr. Armstrong had a lot of experience with working less than desirable jobs. He had to sell want ads door-to-door for a while. He was going to the homes or the rooms of renters, and he had to persuade the person renting out the room to let him write the advertisement for the room to be put into the paper. The person who taught him how to do this job got turned away at the door. The door was slammed in that guy's face immediately. He had no chance to even get inside and take a look at the room so that he could write up a descriptive ad. Mr. Armstrong quickly learned from this. He applied the fifth law of success, which is resourcefulness, and he quickly learned to sell a lot of want ads. So he would go to the renter and ask to see the room that was being advertised, and then he would pretend to be an interested potential tenant of the room, someone who might rent the room from the renter. So obviously, the person renting the room would want to let him inside to see the room and convince him to rent. Once Mr. Armstrong got inside the room, though, he would start writing the advertisement, much to the surprise of the person renting the room. But by that point, he was already in the room. He couldn't have the door slammed in his face. And then he would read the ad to the person renting the room. And it was such a well-written, flowery ad that the poor renter just couldn't resist buying that advertisement. So this was one way that Mr. Armstrong employed resourcefulness to find great success in business. Here's what Mr. Armstrong writes about his advertising experience and how God would end up using that to great effect in his work later on. The 20 years experience in the advertising and journalism profession, starting with this first want ad, was the preparation that supplied the know-how for effective use of this type of media, reaching a readership in excess of 150 million worldwide. Results were more than gratifying. Two such double pages in English in Reader's Digest brought 20,000 new subscribers in India for The Plain Truth. And he lists all these different prominent publications in which they would advertise The Plain Truth to great success. And you know, even from reading what Mr. Armstrong wrote or listening to him speak, he had a way of employing the advertising technique of an introductory hook. He would get people interested right from the very moment he started his message. And then he would lead the person along to his desired conclusion. He would keep them interested throughout, and he'd keep building up suspense until the conclusion. These were all advertising techniques that Mr. Armstrong used to great effect in preaching the true gospel. Like I said, I alluded to last week how Mr. Armstrong had a spark of ambition when he was 16 years old. He's talking a lot here about the seven laws of success in chapter 2. And the fourth one is drive. You have to have drive. You have to be motivated to actually achieve the goal. Mr. Armstrong says here how the whole rest of his life, from 16 years on, he never had to worry about having drive. It all came from that spark of ambition from his boss when he was just 16 years old. That's why it's so important for us to find that spark. If we haven't found it yet, or if we're helping a young person in our families or someone else we know, find that spark. It's absolutely vital to our entire lives, because once we find that spark, it lasts, and it does lead us on to great works. So we have been covering chapter 2 of the autobiography today. It's titled Learning Important Lessons. So much interesting information here. Fighting off a life-threatening illness, surviving a gunshot, all of these other different experiences that I just briefly mentioned, and then just so much life and career wisdom taught to Mr. Armstrong when he was just 18 by his Uncle Frank. Certainly, it's not boring at all, even as Mr. Armstrong seemed to claim at the end of chapter 2. He says, I think the story picks up in interest at this point. But to me, at least, it's already been very, very interesting even before the start of chapter 3. So like I said, next week we'll be interviewing Mr. Dennis Leap about his recently completed 13th volume of the Bible Story. We'll hope you tune in for that. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.